Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening. Happy Shabbat to one and all. Welcome to Yada Yah Radio here with JB and with Kirk, and we're in the midst of concluding the test that Abraham passed so that Yahweh could officially declare not only he and Yishak, but all the rest of us were members of the covenant. How are you, fellas?
Good, thank you.
Good, how are you doing?
Good. Well, I'll pick up where we left off last week. I'll just give you a little update on a couple of things first. Thank you all for writing such wonderful letters, the character accommodation letters that are supposed to be presented to the judge when I go to trial, which I think will be sometime in September, the way it looks at this point. And hopefully, as a result of the evidence, it'll be my only speeding ticket in the last 15 years, but it'll be 45 and a 35 is kind of what we expect. That's really what the facts say in this case. But anyway, it's my lawyer who is a really conscientious, dedicated guy. I wanted to have some letters of recommendation, and you all came through in spades. Someday I'd like to meet the guy that you wrote about, because he's certainly a lot nicer than I am. The other thing is, I remember this time last week, we were doing a show, and I said, you know, we got a really bad thunderstorm. I may not be able to finish the show with you, but we'll hang in there as long as we can. That storm ended up producing between 10 and 12 inches of rain over the course of about 4 to 6 hours. And it was so devastating. It's the worst rainstorm in the history of Central Virginia, at least in recorded history. And it just devastated our community. Numbers of people were swept away in it and killed. Almost everybody I know had serious damage on their property. We had fairly serious damage. We almost lost our largest dam. Worked diligently to try to shore it up. We have a covered bridge in the southern part of our property. We had 20-foot deep holes all around the buttresses for it, and brought in 15 truckloads of what they call riprap, which is a really jagged, heavy stone to try to shore it up. I had several places where our roads were undermined, and we're working to shore them up. A basement of one of our houses was flooded. And, you know, we got off light compared to other people, and, you know, it'll never be the same for us, that stream that runs on the southern part of our property, which normally, you know, is like, at its deepest, is about 6 inches deep. It rose almost 20 feet. It just devastated everything in its path. The covered bridge, which sits about 12 to 13 feet above the stream, it rose so high on it, it not only hit the bottom of it, went through the middle part of the windows of the covered bridge. That just devastated the whole lower portion of our property. So it was It's been a lot to recover, and all the while we're dedicated and devoted to selling it, and we're hoping that that transpires here in short order. So it's been a lot on our plate. So I thank you and appreciate you all for the patience. I've not been a very good emailer as we're trying to go through this, and that's only one of about five or six things that have been occupying my time here recently. I'm still working on concluding Volume 2 of Observations for Our Time, but it is going more slowly than I had hoped. All right, with that said, anything new from the Texas or California contingent?
No, sir.
Not a lot.
Well, that's good news, because California is just about burned up and then got so wet that you almost got washed away after the drought of the century. So it's, you know, there's clearly a lot going on in terms mm-hmm. of the this planet. Whether it's the two devastating volcano eruptions that you've got 600 homes destroyed on the Big Island of Hawaii, where the lava's not coming out of Kilauea's crater, but out of side fissures. And one night alone, it took out 300 homes. If you had waterfront property in one of those communities, the shoreline is now half a mile to a mile from your home. Now you own property that's a mile from the coast, as opposed to right on the coast. Just amazing. And then those pyroclastic flows that, I guess it was Guatemala, that wiped out so many communities. What a travesty. And then combine that with really debilitating weather. We've talked about it on this program and on the Shattering Myths program, that global warming, man-made global warming, is a complete farce. That the planet is warming. It started warming about 1850, but it's part of a 600-year cycle that has existed way before man even existed, going back millions of years, and it's easily traceable. And it's a function of the Earth's tilt on its axis, its orbit around the sun, and solar cycles collectively contribute to it. But while there is no such thing as man-made global warming, we are in a period of degradation of the conditions of our planet. So we are warming as a part of that 1850 trend, which is when it about started. But earthquakes, volcanoes, severe weather. Things are devolving. They're getting worse. And here in Central Virginia, I happen to be in Ohio today, playing grandpa with my little granddaughter. But in Central Virginia, we had 5 days of the most horrific winds, where the winds blew from 40 to 80 knots for five or six consecutive days. Never had anything like that. It was just devastating. Just blowing down buildings and trees, and then a few months thereafter, we have the most hellacious flooding and rains ever. And so after a while, you're scratching your head and saying, "This is not normal." And we're not in a position to resolve it. Pardon?
No, I don't see anywhere to go. I mean, if it was some place to go, I'd say let's all go there. But
everybody
seems to be hit by something.
Correct.
Snow in the winter.
Yeah, I don't think there is a place to go. There is an entity with whom to associate and places to leave. But the leaving and the associating are done spiritually and symbolically, not literally. It's not a get in your car, boat, or plane and go from one place to another. This is clearly a spiritual journey away from the influence of man, from human religious and political influences to trusting and relying completely on Yahweh.
It's a great destination, though.
It is a great destination. That is what Abraham and Yitzhak had done on this day, which is why this story is being shared with us. A week ago, we shared this particular passage, which is Bereshith, Genesis, in the beginning, 22:14. And it reads, "And Abraham, the father who raises up and lifts up those who stand up and reach up, Father of the abundantly enriched, merciful Father, and Father of multitudes who are also confused and troublesome, designated and proclaimed, calling out Kara, which is the key term here. Kara tells us that he was announcing the Mikra, the invitations to be called out and to meet with God. So he called out the name of this place. The name was Shem, and this place is Makum, which means to inquire about standing up and reaching up. It's the home and office, the source of direction for life. God reveals. And it's so much power in that statement, and I just wanted to address it one more time, because in religion, the purpose of religion is to reveal God. The purpose of this relationship is for God to reveal himself. In this experience, this covenant experience that Abraham and Yitzhak were having with Yahweh, God revealed his nature, his purpose, his plan, his character, his nature, his persona. He revealed himself. And that's what he does for us in the Torah. That's what he does for us in the prophets. That's what he does for us in the Psalms. That's what he does for us in the Proverbs. God reveals himself. You can choose to observe him and come to know him through his words, or you can ignore it. But God has and continues to reveal himself. When I say continues, I'm not saying that God provides additional testimony or has additional meetings with people. No, I'm saying that the testimony that he provided us reveals his nature and purpose forever. And so for those who observe it, it's this conversation, this experience, this story, this episode, and the lives of these people and their God teaches us and reveals God's nature forever. So it is the antithesis of religion. In religion, God does not reveal himself through religion. Man reveals the God that he has created in his own image through religion. So he was calling this place, designating this place, God reveals. And there's only really one place and one people through whom God reveals. Now, I should back up and just say that may not be entirely correct, in the sense that we know that Mount Moriah is where God reveals his nature, his purpose, and his plan. This is where he executes his plan. But it's also true that Yahweh conveyed this story about God revealing himself on Mount Horeb in Arabia, where they had a perspective on all of this, because they had just left the crucible of human oppression, of religious and political oppression, and were on their way to the promised land. And so in the midst of that transition out away from man and to God, God did reveal this story. But everything that God actually does for humankind, the whole story of God's interaction with humankind, plays out on this mountain, on Mount Moriah. It is the place where God reveals his nature and his plan. So this goes on to say, showing the way to the benefits of the relationship, Asher. You know, one of the most misunderstood, inadequately translated words in all of Hebrew, Asher, means to provide an upright, fortuitous, and elevated state, a joyful and happy attitude, an encouraged and content mindset to those walking the correct way along the proper and specific path to a prosperous life. Stepping out with regard to this teaching and guidance to pursue the right way. You know, Kirk, you spent a lot of time with the words, and then considering their definition, what the letters themselves convey, and then comparing that to English translations. Sure. Do you get any English translation that conveys even 5% of what I just shared?
No, you have to dig deep and peel it out of here and peel a little bit out of here. And then sometimes I also find that I'm looking up English words to an earlier understanding what they were, what their roots were there to to figure out how the heck they got there or why they did get there. And sometimes you find it in the earlier Saxon, you know, roots or something like that, or in the French or something like that. So, no, you have to dig deep. And you can. I haven't had any trouble, Craig, to be honest with you, finding enough to support 90% of that, if not all. However, boy, you have to work at it. You know, it's not going to be in one little lexicon.
No, as a matter of fact, you aren't going to find it through a concordance. Because prepositions, and this is a relational preposition, is the the principal way that Asher is translated. And so, which or where, then, you know, that kind of thing. That is how Asher is typically rendered. But if you look up Asher in any English Hebrew dictionary, just look it up. In fact, if you don't have any of the tools that we use, then just Google it. Just say Asher Hebrew English meaning. And what you find in every one of the lexicons, without fail, is that spelled exactly the same way, there are four, five, six, seven, sometimes eight different words depending on the diacritical markings that the Masoretes applied to them, which means that the same word, which is essentially three letters, that those same three letters conveyed a very wide range of meanings. And it's so if you take the quick way out, you can search Asher, and you'll find relational, you know, preposition, if you will. And it'll be commonly rendered which and left alone. And then you don't look at any of the rest of the definitions of Asher. And then what you lose is that Asher is not just a relational preposition to show the relationship between things, the association between them, and all that implies, which is so important in this discussion of the covenant. Asher speaks of revealing the way. Asher is an extremely beneficial and fortuitous word. So it's not just showing the way. It's showing the way to the benefits of the relationship. It's a term that focuses on being upright, fortuitous, beneficial, and elevated. There are aspects of Asher that scream joyful and happy in relationship to attitude, being encouraged. It's the mindset of those, and it's stepping out or walking along the proper and specific path to a prosperous life. Stepping out with regard to this teaching and guidance to pursue this through the right way to live one's life. And when you just render this word so carelessly, so thoughtlessly, so inadequately and incompletely with a witch, you've left 95% of what the word can, the wealth of the word, unseen, unknown. And so, you know, I would gladly say and willingly say there is the possibility, guys, that not everything that I have in this amplified definition, Yahweh intended.
Sure.
But who among us is going
to
say...
You've got to write it all down anyway.
Who among us is going to say, you know, I'm capable of copy editing God. I'm going to hereby declare that even though this word could mean to walk the narrow and proper path to give a meaning to life and deliver the benefits of the relationship, that, you know, maybe some of that doesn't tickle my fancy, and I'm going to edit God and remove some of those possibilities. And if I'm going to err, I'm going to err on giving God credit for command, all of it that fits, and then you know, letting someone else whittle it down if they choose. For me, I prefer.
You can never go wrong with giving more information.
No,
you can go wrong with giving less information.
Well, based on that, let me give you a couple more. This one,
okay.
I know you're an authority on Asher, but
oh, I love the
if
word.
You if you look up
Asher, I always call it an authority, but it's one of my favorite words.
Compared to most,
not more. Hey, the fact of the matter is,
I find
I'm
more
here
in one of your translations of the word.
We're all here because of this word.
But Asher is rich, literally or figuratively, is an adjective to or to be enriched, is abundantly supplied with resources, one who presses on to from Asher, which is to be or become rich, to enrich, to gain wealth, to be empowered, to be enlightened. Interestingly enough, there's another Asher 6240 or Eresh, which is 10, and I thought that really interesting because oftentimes we talk about to be enriched tenfold.
Tenfold, right.
To the 10th power. So it's kind of buried in there as well. It's,
10 is
sure.
A magnitude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Asher and Asherah, which is the raw part of Sarah, to the 10th power, and it also means to be to the 10th power again. So those are just the ones that you don't normally... not the ones I normally write down, you know, if I'm in a hurry. But, it's now, who knows? But if you're in the context of what we're talking about people who endeavor to raw, to endure with, strive with,
uh-huh.
and people who, because of going through the Moed Mikros, the thing that we do afterwards, the Shabuot part, the promise part, is when we are enlightened and empowered. So,
mm-hmm.
all
you added another seven or eight
layers.
Synonyms and layers to it. I don't think there was a single one that you added, though, that was inconsistent with or wasn't the other way to look at it is that wasn't compatible with the core that had already been there. So they were,
right,
these were all... They were all symbiotic. They were all confirming of the same thought, that Asher enriches those who take a stand, who walk the correct path through life. Asher is an abundant and beneficial reward in every possible way. Asher is a really good thing.
Good letter,
and it's so why don't you share what the letters mean?
Well, you've got an aleph, which is usually the authority or the head of the family, the protector of, and so forth, of the herd, or in this case, symbolically of us. You've got the SH is teeth. We also, that's nourishment, symbolically, and it's also words and words that nourish. Obviously, without the words, we've got nothing. And then you follow it by a Rosh, and a Rosh is the observant individual. So if you just went that short, if there is a Shir, which there is an I in front of it, is, which would mean to, and some of the closely related words of Asher, you put an I in front of it, meaning perspective. So you have the perspective is, and this one is a perspective I, on of the words of, and then you have a yod, a hand reaching down, lifting up, the one who is the resh or rosh, is the observant man. So you can't fall off the floor here. It's all there. It's all there everywhere you look. Reinforces it.
If the reason this is important is this is follows, this is the place where God reveals. Well, God reveals what? Well, God reveals the way to the benefits of the relationship. The means to this elevated and enriched state. How to walk the correct way along the specific and proper path that leads to life. That's what he is revealing. That's why it's so important here. And it comes before he spoke this day upon the mountain to observe and understand Yahweh. What did he speak? He spoke about the way to receive the benefits of the relationship and how you can avail yourself of them when you listen to what Yahweh had to say upon this mountain. And that the means to that is to ra'ah, is to observe and understand. So it's the only way to appreciate what God is offering, what He is conveying to us, what He is revealing, is to be observant, to read these words, to think about these words, to understand these words. And if your primary language isn't Hebrew, and even if it is Hebrew, to take the time to study the words, to think about it. What do they mean? What is God offering? What is He revealing? What is He conveying here in this place? Why did Abraham, after all of this, say, this is the place where God reveals? This is the place where, if you are observant, you will come to know and understand the benefits of the relationship, because God is showing us how to walk to Him, how to be part of His covenant family. So that's a lot in Bereshith, Genesis, in the beginning, 22:14. It's a lovely culmination of this story. But we're not done, actually. The next statement reads, the spiritual messenger, the divine implement and heavenly representative of Yahweh, called out, Abraham, a second time from the sky above, and said, by myself I have made a promise, and I have sworn an oath, prophetically announces Yahweh, because indeed for the benefit of the relationship, you have acted and engaged in accordance with the word, and therefore you have not withheld your son, your unique, special, and beloved child. Well, there's several aspects of this that are worth our undivided attention. First of all, who is the spiritual messenger, the divine implement, and the heavenly representative who called out? Who is this Wa-Malak?
The Yahweh, in the form of perhaps...
Yahweh himself. Yahweh himself. Clearly, it's Yahweh himself.
Mm-hmm. But it says Yahweh, so I'm okay.
Yeah, it says Yahweh. Prophetically announces Yahweh. So it's the, you know, beginning of this, I said, you know, I have reasons to conclude that you ought not look at this spiritual messenger as anything other than Yahweh himself. Now, when I say that, he tells us that. So, I mean, I had reason to suggest that early on. He affirms it here. Now, what I had said early on, though, needs to be understood. How much of God would fit on the top of that mountain?
Only 3%
inconsequential fraction of a percentage of Yahweh. This is vastly more extreme than Walt Disney trying to interact with Mickey Mouse. You know, a three-dimensional construct trying to interact with a two-dimensional construct. Far more extreme than that. Because, first of all, Mickey Mouse isn't a living being. Mickey Mouse not only has no free will, Mickey Mouse doesn't exist apart from the imagination of Walt Disney.
The animator.
So it's you cannot compare the construct. Here we're dealing with a seven-dimensional being interacting with a three-and-a-half-dimensional being. But the three-and-a-half-dimensional being is living. Yeah, life can't exist in less than three dimensions. And man is incapable of creating life. So they're infinitely different. And to go up one dimension versus to go from three to seven dimensions to climb up the ladder four dimensions is is essentially infinity times infinity times infinity times infinity. So there is no comparison. Now, that said, the only way that Walt Disney can interact with Mickey Mouse is with implements. He uses the implements, Kirk, that you use. Mm-hmm. And pencil, paintbrushes, right? And
yes, sir.
That's how he interacts with Mickey Mouse. Well, so Yanoa must also use an implement. He himself cannot enter a lesser dimension, but he can interact with a lesser dimension through an implement. And a Malak is a spiritual implement. Yahweh is a spiritual being. So Yahweh can absolutely represent himself through a spiritual implement. That's what he's doing here. This Malak is not a separate being, but an aspect of Yahweh's nature. And so it gives us a much better appreciation of why Yahweh is speaking through the spiritual implement and interacting through the spiritual implement, and how Yahweh, as a seven-dimensional spiritual being, can do so. And I think that dynamic is important, because it's important to recognize, well, why didn't Yahweh simply come down in a physical form and interact with Abraham in that way? Because had he done so, it would have been such an infinitesimal aspect of Yahweh's nature, you'd be back to the whole concept of Yahusha. So radically diminished.
Finish, yeah.
To make the comparison from one to the other is a leap beyond our understanding. But in this case, Yahweh could take part of his nature as a spiritual being and convey it through this implement. This is much more Yahweh, much more of his true nature, much more of his actual presence was conveyed here on Mount Moriah through the spiritual implement than ever could have been conveyed through Yahusha. That's why it is such a sad thing that Christians have labeled their Jesus God, and that they pray to this human God, and they speak of this God being killed and bodily resurrected, not having any understanding that the very moment you use a physical body to convey an aspect of your nature, you are so diminished from your true nature that there's no way to even correlate these things. That Yahweh as light on the top of Mount Horeb, Yahweh as a spiritual implement here with Abraham, is vastly more of his true nature and his persona than he ever could possibly be in human form. So he took this approach when he was dealing with the single most important thing in his universe as it relates to life. If his entire message to humankind, which is the covenant, he took this form.
Does that not answer the question that so many people have about the comparison of, oh, I'd like to be there when Yahusha was there, or I'd like to be there and walk with Moses, versus when you have Torah, which word means so much more powerful than a diminished manifestation.
Yes.
I mean, so where do you want to find God? Well, in his words. Where
in
you
his
want to
words.
Study in his words. Everything
is more efficient.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. His words do a massively superior job of revealing his nature, his purpose, and his plan than any physical human manifestation. And so it's important that people to recognize, listeners to recognize, that this meeting between Yahweh and Abraham on Mount Moriah to usher in the covenant and to explain the first of the seven Moed Mikre, Pesach. Yahweh, more of Yahweh, his true nature and presence was here than it would be 2,000 years later through Yahusha. And it's a crying shame that Christians have created a religion out of the diminished physical manifestation of Yahweh's nature. Tremendous, tremendous crime against who God is and what he's doing. This was a much more impressive, much more personal experience. So the spiritual messenger, the divine implement, and heavenly representative of Yahweh. We have Kara again, don't we? Mm-hmm. And you know, I made the point a week ago, and I want to remake it here. Is Kara the principal Hebrew word for said or spoke?
No. Very rarely is it used for that.
Yeah. What is the principal Hebrew word for said?
Amar.
Amar. What's the principal Hebrew word for spoke?
Dabar.
Or got them both. Yes. Words, plural, would be dabarim, and singular would be dabar. And both of those words are used, I would, if I were just harboring a guess here, I would say that amar for said appears 100 times more than does kara in this text, in this context.
Easily.
And dabar appears probably 20 times more frequently than kara does in this context.
Not higher.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. So, not higher. Yeah, maybe 30, 40, 50 times more. Maybe it's 150 times more between them. Mm-hmm. So, why twice now is the choice of words kara, as opposed to abar or dabar, when both are the most common words for said or spoke?
Because he's calling out. Different concept. Speaking to you.
Summoning, inviting, welcoming, proclaiming, designating, announcing.
There's so many more nuances to kara than there are to amar or dabar.
Oh, yeah.
Correct. And what is Yahweh's purpose in this whole meeting is to establish the relationship between Pesach and the Beret, the covenant.
Mikra.
Yeah. And the word that Yahweh chose to describe his invitations to be called out and meet is Mikra. Mikra is based on kara. The only difference between Mikra and kara is it has the ma before it, which is to inquire about. You know, it's an interrogatory. You know, to inquire about this reading and reciting, this invitation to be welcomed, this summons to meet, to be called out. Called out of what? Called out of the world of man, of human institutions, of religion and politics, of economic schemes and militarism and patriotism, being called out of the world of men and to be called into the home of God, the family of God. Why he chose Kara. Kara explains the entire purpose of this story. Where said is wholly inadequate. Dabar would have been nice because it does reemphasize the word, but the word that needed to be emphasized here is Kara. And Kara is easily in the top 10 most important words in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
Sure.
Basis of Mikra, the Iowa 7 annual meetings, to be invited to be called out and meet with him. So the spiritual messenger, the divine implement, the heavenly representative, Kara, called out an invitation to Abraham a second time. From the sky above, Shamaim, from the heavens. And he said, by myself, ba ani, with regard to me, through me, because of who I am. by myself. I didn't need any religious help. Trust me on this one. I didn't need any political help. Trust me on this one. I didn't need a military. Trust me on this one. By myself. Bahani. I have made a promise, and I have sworn an oath. No partner gods, no intercessor, no Jeebus, no Allah, no Shiva, no Lord. By myself. I've made a promise. I've sworn an oath. Shaba. I have made a solemn statement which I will uphold. And I am now affirming the trustworthy nature of my vow based upon Shaba. What does Shaba also mean?
Oath. A
promise.
A promise.
And? There's a numerical value to Shaba, isn't there?
No. Seven.
Seven. How many Mikrei are there?
Seven.
Seven.
Oh, gee. I wonder if there's a connection between Kara being invited and called out and Shaba, a promise involving seven.
Give you any odds you want, it absolutely is.
Of course, he's talking about the seven Mikrei here. It's not just one is not wonderful. It isn't even beneficial, not even good by itself. Pesach is the world's worst possible outcome by itself. It's eternal life. Everybody says, I want eternal life. No, you don't if you don't matzah. If it's not followed by Lakotam. If it isn't supported by Shabua, you sure as hell don't want eternal life. Because where is eternal life going to be if you don't benefit from matzah, bakudim, and Shabua?
Anywhere that Yahweh ain't.
Right, which would be Sheol, commonly known to Christians and Muslims.
And that's why the only place that isn't with Yahweh will be Sheol.
That's right. It's an eternal prison. You don't want to be immortal and separated from God. That's the worst possible outcome. You're far better off having your soul cease to exist. No penalty, no pain, no anguish. You don't know God. God doesn't know you. You lived your life. It's over. And so it's important to understand that God's promise is fulfilled through seven of these kara, these invitations to meet and be called out. And that Pesach, which is being demonstrated here, is a wonderful first step, but only when done and accepted and enjoyed and celebrated in conjunction with matzah, which removes the fungus.
Whole, it's not the whole itself.
Right, of religious and political corruption from our souls. So that what? We can become children in Yahweh's family. For what purpose? So that he can enrich and empower and enlighten us. Listen, we're all God's kids right now. And it's a wonderful situation. Quite frankly, I wouldn't want an eternity of this.
No.
I'm learning. I'm having fun. I'm growing. But the disparity between me and Yahweh is too great for this to be the condition for all time. If it were not for Shavua, for being enriched and empowered and uplifted and enlightened, eternity with a being so vastly superior to at least who I am, I am not going to speak for you guys, but I tell you that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like I was talking to my son and daughter-in-law about my granddaughter this evening after dinner. And I said, you know, it's interesting. We're enjoying ourselves, obviously, and we're pouring our lives into this child. But she's still 3 years away from remembering any of this. There's absolutely nothing we did for her today. And we had such fun with her today. There's nothing that she'll remember. Until she's around five, she'll have no recollection of any of this. And, you know, while we enjoyed it, there would come a time where the difference between my little granddaughter and myself would get worrisome in all of us. But it doesn't turn out that way, because as she continues to grow, as we continue to work to empower and enrich her, to enlighten her, there comes a time where she becomes more like her parents and us. And that relationship grows and is fulfilling, fun, enriching for all of us. And that's what has to happen in our relationship with Yahweh. We can't continue forever being this dissimilar to him, this inadequate compared to him. And so he has to, Shavuah, he has to enrich and empower us. And by the way, that's the 10th.
Well, it's also the only way he could grow.
Correct.
You know, he couldn't grow from eternity with us in our current state.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right now it's amusing. This is the blink of an eye in eternity.
Yeah. That's even a bigger point to me. You know, he couldn't. To him, we're talking seconds to our what we call years, and you know, mm-hmm. 6 days is 14 billion years.
Yeah.
This happened very fast for him. It's only been 6 days.
Oh yeah.
He does. So yeah. He can't even go much longer. Even super is only a day for him.
Religious would say that God is long suffering. No, he's not. This whole experience is a blink of an eye.
Yeah.
It's a
week.
Time goes by so much faster for him than it does for us. Yeah, it's a week. Yeah, the whole thing is a week. So, you know, the whole thing played out in a week. So it is important to understand that the dynamic of all of this. So the spiritual messenger, the divine implement, the heavenly representative called out Kara, summoned and invited to meet and to be called out, proclaimed to Abraham from the heavens above. And he said, by myself I have made a promise and I have sworn an oath, based on seven. But, you know, there's a number of things. It's not just that there's seven mikrae. How many dimensions are there?
Well, we know at least seven.
Seven.
Yeah, and which one is Yahweh in?
He's in the top one.
Seven.
Right. You know, and there was a time where I was really reluctant to project my conclusion based on all that I had studied and read, that there were seven dimensions when man can only define four of them, can only understand three of them, can define four of them, and knows that there has to be more because our observable universe only represents 4 to 6% of what's there. And so we are in a difficult position as humans because a three-dimensional construct cannot envision a fourth dimension. It's beyond their capacity. It's just like if Mickey and Minnie Mouse, if they were really living creatures, they would not understand height. Breadth and width, they got it down. But the concept of 3D would be beyond their capacity to envision. They might be able to mathematically model it, but they could never envision it or understand it, perceive it. Just as
it's an abstract to be theorized about.
Right. We can theorize and we can model mathematically the fourth dimension, which is time. But we can't envision it. We can't perceive it. We can't maneuver in it. We can't explore within it. And that alone is insufficient to describe the universe. And so, not only do you have the repulsive nature of an energy source that we do not understand, that we call dark energy. Who knows why we call it dark energy, but it's an energy source that has a repulsive nature, that by repulsive, it's not a pejorative. It means that it separates, which is an enormous part of God's plan. That's what it means to be called out, to be separated from the world of man, to be separated from a physical being, to become a spiritual being, and to be set apart into Yahuwah. And then there is dark matter, which is attractive, pulling things together. One relationship, the other choice. And a being that is six-dimensional cannot create a six-dimensional universe. It's impossible. A two-dimensional being can't create a two-dimensional universe. A three-dimensional being can't create a three, but a three can commit a two. A four can conceive a three. In fact, a seven-dimensional being can not only create a six-dimensional universe, and this is important because he's talking about an oath that's based and a promise that's based on seven. A seven-dimensional universe being can not only create a six-dimensional universe, he can do so without divesting himself of any energy. Has no negative effect on him. So I was always wondering, you know, how could God create a universe that is as massive and as spectacular and as large as our universe without taking such enormous amounts of his own energy to do so? Well, the fact is, if he's a dimension, which he is, beyond the universe that he created, it's inconsequential. It's like Walt Disney is not diminished by the lead and the pencil that was used to sketch Mickey Mouse. No, the thought process that went into conceiving him in the first place. But this also gives us a suggestion of where we're going. That through Yahweh's plan, through his Moed Mikre, through what took place on Mount Moriah at this time, through what God revealed, through this relationship designating the covenant in its terms and conditions and its benefits that was conveyed here in the Torah by Yahweh to Abraham, through Moshe, to us, God is explaining the means for us to become seven-dimensional. With each between dimensions being an infinite increase in power and capability. You know, to be infinitely empowered and enriched, going from 3 to 4, and 4 to 5, and 5 to 6, and 6 to 7, is what God is offering us. Spectacular, isn't it?
Yeah, well.
Mm-hmm. And it's all in his word. It's all in his word. If you just take this word seriously, God's promise is literally envisions everything and incorporates everything associated with seven. Now, seven isn't just man who was created on the sixth day, who's a carbon-based life form with the atomic number of six. Plus God, who is one, equaling seven, which is God's idea of perfection. There are seven steps that are part of the Mikre that take us from where we are to where he is. And that Yahweh himself is seven-dimensional. And that human history, which for us plays out over 7,000 years from it was just shy of 6,000 years ago that Adam and Chawa had to leave the garden because they did not listen to and act upon Yahweh's instructions. To the time that we're all called back into this garden, all of Yahweh's covenant family are called back into this garden in year 6,000, Yah, and live the next 1,000 years, year 6,000 to 7,000, Yah, with Yahweh in this world. That is also 7 days celebrating the Shabbat, the week, from Yahweh's perspective. 7 days from his perspective, 7,000 years from ours. Plan is unveiled with seven Moed Mikre leading to the seventh dimension. Because there is more than Shavua. There is Teruah, where Yahweh wants his children who have been enriched in power to convey his message. And his message is twofold. There's the good news and there's the bad news. And Yahweh always conveys both. You can't enjoy a good relationship with Yahweh until you separate yourself from the bad influence of humanity. And then this leads to a day of reconciliation, such that we can camp out with Yahweh for all time. And from Kippurim, reconciliations, to Sukkah, camping out. Personally, I think every bit of that is in Shabbat, which I think is why it's used here. Do you guys see more?
That's pretty in-depth right there.
It happens to be an infinite number, by the way, too.
Yes. So is God has made us a promise. It wasn't a promise until Jebus arrives. It wasn't a promise until Paul came up with a whole different plan. It wasn't a promise until the scumbag known as Muhammad. By the way, I have an interesting story for you. I've shared that I'm selling our property in Virginia. The property was selected by the Wall Street Journal to be what they call the home of the day. It's a big deal. It's only, very few homes are chosen each year. The home itself has to have something extraordinary about it to be the Wall Street Journal home of the day. And the home I designed there, I'm the architect, it's unique. It's first, the property is that when I bought the property, it was nothing but intertwined mesh of entangled vines, multiflorus, curse of Jefferson is what it was, and it had been used to dump rubbish. It was just filled with all sorts of trash dumps. And I cleared the land myself. Didn't fit the mold of the aristocracy in the South, I'll tell you. Because I got on my tractor and I cleared it myself. And then I designed a house that I thought would fit into the community that was on the footprint of Mount Vernon. It's the exact footprint of Mount Vernon with the two perpendicular dependencies connected by curb hyphens into the main home, but done with the architectural style of Monticello, Jefferson's home. So it was George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and a celebration of the best of their architecture with a home that, with a property that I had envisioned, and billionth of what Iowa has done. But I saw this raw piece of land and said, this is what it can be, and transformed it. And so it was selected by the Wall Street Journal as a home of the day. After they did all the interviews on it, they decided not to run it. Would any of you like to guess as to why they decided they would not run it?
Far away. What happened?
I'm going to guess it's based on who the owner was.
That is correct. We asked to stay anonymous. The only place first of all, I don't want any attention for anything, for any reason, ever. But I'm willing to put myself out there as it relates to what I've learned about Islam and what I've learned about Yahweh. I'm not ashamed to do so, and I realize that the credibility that comes from doing it under my own name is enormous, and I know Yahweh's got my back, my front, and my side. But no, they wouldn't do it because they said of your anti-Islam stance.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And, it didn't matter, the fact that I said, I really don't have an anti-Islam stance. Yeah, I don't have an anti-Islam stance. Prophet of Doom isn't my stance, not my opinion. Prophet of Doom is Islam in Muhammad's own words. It takes the two oldest biographical sources and historical sources of Islam and uses them to reorder the Quran chronologically and set it into the context of Muhammad's life. the only sources and Prophet of Doom are Islamic. The only testimony in Prophet of Doom is from Muhammad. If Prophet of Doom is anti-Islamic, then Muhammad is anti-Islamic. No one was willing to take the risk, nor had the courage, to tell the truth, and to not only explain, but to prove why those 19 Muslims flew planes into America's buildings and created and killed 3,000 people on that day. I did. And man's reward for telling the truth in today's world run amok and political correctness is that you would be shunned. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I just
the Wall Street Journal.
You know, right now.
The Wall Street Journal. Well, you know what's interesting too? Yes, that you know, I have written a series of books that expose and condemn Christianity. You can't be any more anti-Christian than questioning Paul. I have written a series of books that condemn Judaism, An Intro to God. Devastating to Judaism. I've written a series of books that condemn socialist secular humanism. Yada yada, that whole series.
Yada yada.
Devastating to socialist secular humanism. It proves that their whole argument against God is an argument against religion, not actually against God at all. And I have now written an entire series of books that condemn political correctness and politics and militarism and introduction, excuse me, and observations for our time. None of those mattered. It was only exposing the truth about Islam. There's a reason the world is in such a mess. People are stupid, deliberately so. Now, there's only one common characteristic between the Islamic jihadists that perpetrate 99% of the world's terrorist acts. It's only one thing that they all have in common.
Islam.
Sure. And it's so obvious.
It's just statistics.
It's just
a matter of looking objectively at the numbers.
Correct. Or reading the evidence. Muhammad was a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And that may have been one of his most, because he was far worse than a terrorist. He was a mass murderer. He was a pedophile.
Mm-hmm.
He was a rapist. He was a sexual predator. He was a liar. He was an armed robber and a thief. He was sadistic. Yeah, he was among the worst human beings who ever lived, by his own testimony. Irrefutably. So I thought that would be interesting for you all to know that.
I understand.
And I think it's important too because
we're not surprised.
We have celebrated. I think celebrated is a fair term here for what follows. I know that with some trepidation and a lot of humility, I have celebrated, and I think you've all celebrated with me, this realization as we've gone through Yashaya and realized that God's talking about us. That collectively we are creating this neck, this sign that he's lifting up for his people to see, that we are this choder, this branch that is grafted into the tree of lives that represents Yahweh, and the branch is being Dod and Yosha, and we're this twig that has been grafted onto it, and while you know we laugh about it and say, you know, this is just an insignificant twig on these main branches, it was significant enough for the creator of the universe to call attention to who we are and what we're doing. And that he himself is engaged in this process and looking up. We all celebrated that. We are celebrating that. We still receive letters on that. it's important to know that it does not come with any acclaim, and it comes at a tremendous price. And in a very small way, it mirrors Yahweh's entire interaction with humankind. There is never any acclaim, and it comes at a tremendous price. And don't say for a moment that Christianity is proclaiming the life of Jesus. No, they completely ignore Yahusha. Won't even say his name. And they disavow everything that he said. Now, Yahweh interacts with humankind is similar to our own. And so, when that occurred here recently, I actually celebrated it. It may end up costing me several million dollars because it was the centerpiece of a promotional campaign to share the existence of the sale with the kind of people that read that magazine. And it's not going to occur. And there's no other publication that will cover it. So it's going to cost me millions of dollars. And I didn't feel the slightest, even twinge of regret. There was no part of me that even said for a moment, if only I hadn't done that.
Yeah.
So, I said, the expose on Muhammad, of using the hadith and Tariq, the history and the biography of Muhammad, to set the Quran in chronological order and to set it within the context of Muhammad's life so it could be understood, so we could understand why Muslims are so deadly today and why there's no resolve in this problem and it can't be fought with bullets and bombs. It was my second greatest gift to humanity. It was my second greatest gift to humanity.
Oh, yeah.
It's the second most valuable thing I've ever done with my life. And if I look at it, and I've had a pretty good life. I'm not saying I've been a pretty good person, but I mean, by human standards, I've accomplished a lot. And it's the second most valuable thing I've done in my life. Most valuable thing is what we're doing right now. Translating Yahweh's testimony.
Revealing Yahweh's words the best.
Yes, right. So, I just wanted to share that just so that you all have an appreciation, and I think everybody does.
Okay.
That this world is very hostile to the truth. They're hostile to God.
I was talking with Patty about that a few days ago. Christians love to claim that they're persecuted in America. I'm like, come out in favor of Yahweh in a church, and then you'll see what persecution is.
Right. Speak out.
Christians in America are not persecuted.
Right. Yeah. Speak out and tell the truth
about the truth about religion and see who's persecuted.
Right. Tell the truth. And
just because you're not
America.
Given a favored status that you are used to throughout history doesn't mean you're not being that you're being persecuted. It just means you're not being given favored.
Yeah, according to Trump, you do not have the right in America to not celebrate, not put your hand over your heart and stand at attention as the national anthem is played.
Well,
that is not your right. You do not have that option.
I don't want to say anything, but does the Constitution not allow me to not be prepared?
Not according to Trump. Yeah, because I choose not to. I don't stand. I don't place my hand over my heart. I do not sing it. I'm
doing this.
There's a restaurant called Mission Barbecue in my hometown. And every day at noon, they play the Star Spangled Banner, and it's filled with military because Charlottesville is, because of the National Ground Intelligence Center, is a military town, the dominant employer in town now. And these are the people that determine who America kills. They're targeters.
Mm-hmm.
So they come up with the targets for drones. And so they're the people that work all day deciding who lives and who dies. And they go to this restaurant, and it's just noontime, and it's the national anthem. Everybody stands, hand over their heart. I was there one time and about puked. And I will never go back anywhere near New, ever. In fact, I avoid the place like the plague. I don't go to sports events anymore because it is so difficult to just quietly try to leave before the national anthem or before the seventh inning stretches, God Bless America. And I will not do it. Yahweh has made it really clear that we must disavow all oaths that we have made to human institutions. It is a requirement to be part of his family.
When I go into a classroom to work on something, and that happens to be when the announcements are coming on, and, oh, we're going to all stand for the pledge, I sit right down and start working on the computer like I'm there to do because I'm not going to. I get all sorts of dirty looks over that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No one's actually said anything to me yet, but...
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm not
going to do it. I'm not pledging allegiance. I'm disavowing my allegiance. Because my allegiance is to a singular individual, Yahweh. Period. And he will not. He made it really clear in the first statement of the Etched in Stone. If your allegiance is to anyone other than me, you will not exist in my presence.
You be with me. No.
Yes. You will not exist with other gods in my presence.
Right. And I have found that just as Trump requires everyone to think and act like him, I find American politicians, American religious leaders, American military leaders to be scum. Disingenuous, dishonest, self-serving, promising that which they cannot deliver. And I think America realizes it, which is why suicide rates, I don't know if you all are following the articles, but suicide in America is skyrocketing.
Terry was talking about the other day. It's just like every time you turn around, there's somebody who's killing themselves. It's just...
Yeah.
It's not just another Terry.
The most famous one here in the last week is Kate Spade. You know, her husband have created this marvelous line of portable women's handbags. And, Kate Spade, she just hung herself in her own home. Mentally depressed.
Is it the overall picture that they're seeing of how the world is just decomposing as we watch?
Well, there's no hope. There's no hope. There's no truth. We uniquely have found the source of truth. Yeah. We're not saying we're the truth, but we have found the source of truth. And we're accurately conveying from that source. And yet, less than 1 in 1 million people care about what Yahweh, who just happens to be the creator of the God of the universe, has to say. And without Yahweh, there is no hope. And I don't care how religious you are, you know it's a crock. We all know it's a crock. I mean, there is no way you could have half a brain and believe 90% of what Christians and Muslims and Buddhists and Mormons and the like have to say. You're just not thinking. And if you do think, you'll lose your faith. So here I am by myself. So how many, is there, did God require a political or religious leaders to stand up for him?
Nope.
Did he require a priest to give last rites?
No.
Nope.
Did he require rabbis to explain it all to you?
Absolutely not.
Nope.
No. Did he require an army to get his people out of Egypt?
Didn't need them. Didn't want them.
No. Did he require an interpreter to convey this message to Abraham?
No.
Did he have anybody stand up for him or in for him when he came up with his plan of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim?
No, sir.
So, by myself. That means?
You do it all.
No Jesus. There's no Jesus.
That's true. Or Paul.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, Paul. Or Muhammad. Yeah. You needed me to fill in the gaps.
Or Buddha. Just for the other one.
Myself. I alone. Bonnie. I have made a promise and I have sworn an oath based upon seven. Nam, by the way, is an interesting word. Nam is used far more often than Kara too, to convey a proclamation. And when it's used, it is conveying a prophetic announcement. Now, it is one of the great misnomers, I think, and it's a tragedy. I know I was guilty of it. That when we speak of prophecy, almost everybody thinks that somebody yesterday or today predicting something that has not yet occurred and predicting that it will occur. Isn't that how most people define prophecy?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you were a prophet today, you would be predicting something that has not yet occurred and predicting its occurrence. Or if you were a prophet in yesteryear, you predicted that which would occur after you, and there's some evidence that some of what you predicted occurred. Right? That's how we consider the word prophecy. Right. Now, I would ask you, in the language of Hebrew, is that possible?
No.
No.
That isn't even possible, is it? In Hebrew, it is impossible to have a past tense statement that is fulfilled in the future tense because there are no tenses at all. So the whole concept from a Hebrew perspective, and that's why it's so important to think Hebrew. It's impossible. Also, as a being who is energy-based, spiritually-based, light, equivalent to light, is it possible to predict the future?
Of course.
No,
not really. Not really.
No, they just report.
You actually witness the future. You see the future. You experience the future. You're not predicting the future at all.
Oh, well, yes.
You simply experience the future,
mm-hmm.
and you can report in the past what you have seen because... time simply exists for you.
Yes.
Time is a dimension for you, just as height and width and depth are for us. You can maneuver it just as easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so, with that understanding, the past is prophetic. So, if from our perspective, if 14 billion years after you created the universe, that you reveal what you did and the process that you instigated to create the universe, if you are speaking of it, it's still prophetic.
Mm-hmm.
History, no matter how far back, to report it accurately is prophetic. The reason that's important is that this conversation that Yahweh was having with Abraham took place 500 years before Moshe wrote it down. So for Yahweh to say prophetically announces Yahweh, prophecy has to include history, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, that's profound. That means there's a prophetic aspect of the creation account. That means there's a prophetic aspect of the flood. That means there's a prophetic aspect of the covenant here with Abraham.
Well, you know, what's a corollary to that is that when all these false religions give their history, quote unquote, and they get it wrong, that disqualifies them from speaking for God.
That's
correct. Muhammad's history of creation is so scientifically inaccurate, you know, evidentially inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
All of the religious idea of that we live in a 6,000-year-old earth is so ridiculous, it disqualifies mm-hmm. everyone who purports these things from speaking for God.
Correct. The
you're required to get
powerful
both future and past 100% accurate if you want to claim to speak for God.
Correct.
I don't want to make that claim.
No.
Read what he said.
No. You know, that's when Paul said in his first letter, in the one to the Galatians, called Galatians, that the covenant conveyed on Mount Sinai was with Hagar enslaved and enslaves, which is the very foundation of his argument. His history was wrong. He got it wrong.
Yeah. It's the antithesis of what Yahweh was saying.
Exactly. The opposite of what happened. And so it's vitally important to understand that this discussion that Moshe is recording for our benefit 500 years after it happened, that took place with Abraham, is a prophetic declaration because its purpose, its lessons, its insights, its revelations reverberate throughout all time. They are affecting us today. They were prophetic of what we're experiencing today. It was a prophetic statement that took place in the past. That's extremely important. It defines Yahweh's nature, the nature of time. Why Yahweh chose to reveal himself in Hebrew and not any other language.
Well, there would be none that would be adequate enough because they're not.
I'm 100% convinced Yahweh created Hebrew because it was the only language that could convey his message.
Correct.
I don't think he settled for something man-made. I think he created it himself.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's so important to translate his revelation in the language
as accurately as possible.
Correct. And to celebrate all of the nuances of the stems, so these relational stems, and the conjugations that define a completed versus an ongoing action, and all of the volitional moods, and the full meaning of each word and the full richness of the tapestry of the original language. And yeah, it's literally a requirement if you're going to know God, because his very name is a Hebrew name. I mean, just the nuance of his name, of a hand reaching out, down and out to us, and two people, one man, one female, standing up and reaching up to God with this tent peg that secures and enlarges a protective canopy in the midst of all of that. A name that you realize is actually feminine, conveying the full nature of Yahweh's both maternal and paternal character, and conveying the full aspect of family. And it's this family, it's Abraham and Sarah and their son Yitzhak, that are conveyed in this name.
And you know, the ultimate irony of Yahweh's name being feminine and Yahweh having a feminine aspect is just how often religion has been used to disenfranchise women and, you know, basically treat women as property.
Correct. Yeah, that was one of the reasons that the Greek had such a horrendous time with Yosha. Now, Yosha isn't actually a feminine name, but the vowel ending made it feminine in Greek, and that's why they had to change it to Jesus, Iusus. But Yahweh is absolutely a feminine name in Hebrew. Any word in Hebrew that ends with a hey, it's feminine. That's the principal means of taking a word from masculine to feminine.
Yes.
Put the hey at the end of it.
Female.
Right.
Or the Torah is life-giving. Yahweh is life-giving.
Right. So the Torah is feminine.
Totally appropriate.
Yeah. The Bayath Covenant. Feminine in Hebrew. Almost everything that's important is feminine in Hebrew. Yeah.
I don't think Paul would appreciate that either.
No,
he didn't like women very much.
You want a trip?
Then they were supposed to shut up.
Yeah.
You want a trip? What I did today is while I was... I translated all last night as well and to get ready. And for some reason, I picked up Chabakuk.
Chabakuk.
I started reading 1 and 2, paralleling next to what we've been. Now, we've just discovered the only possible way you can get home and get reconciled with Yahweh.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's what we've been doing week after week after week.
Right.
And it's so straightforward, so clean, so easy to understand, even in a, I don't want to say superficial, but even in the first scan, you know, if you just read the bold print, it's very easy to understand what these words are, and then it's embellished. There's so much more you can read, too. Then read Shabbat 1 and 2, and Yahweh just plays hell with this guy, Paul. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And when you lay them down side by side, you just go, how can you fall for that crap? How could anybody? Maybe if they went off and found somebody in Europe who had no clue, fine. But how could anybody who has read the Torah even a little bit fall for Paul?
Yes. How can you fall for Paul when Yahweh is having this marvelous conversation with Abraham? Devotes, you know, the core of his opening statement to Abraham. And this is God's introduction to humankind, and it's all focused on Abraham. And then you have Paul come along and say, you know, Abraham didn't know, no, not Abraham didn't do anything. Abraham was saved because of his faith. And you go, say, what? What part of that story did you not read? And then you realize that God, 666 years before Paul would write his first letter, called Paul out by name, denoted every characteristic of the man in his audience, and called him the plague of death. And you're going to believe Paul over God? And create your scripture with the centerpiece of your New Testament being that scoundrel's letters? What's the matter with you, Christian? It is profound. And Kirk, you reread Chabaouk 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've translated it probably three times. You know, one of the most profound things I've ever done in my life was Chabaouk 1 and 2. And I only came to it for one reason.
David
quotes it twice in Galatians.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
He does. He quotes it twice in Galatians. And I'm sitting there saying, huh? Oh, my God. This is Satan doing what Satan does. This is Satan saying, you know, good and pure in Islam is halal, when in fact that's his name in Yahshua. He is halal. Yeah. This is Satan having Paul reveal that he is demon-possessed in his second letter to those living in Corinth. And Satan said, God, Yahweh, these humans that you so love and you so sacrifice for, they are so stupid. I will tell them that Muhammad and Paul are my messengers, and they won't figure it out.
They won't care.
They won't care. Doesn't matter what you say. They won't care. They won't figure it out. And it's so enormously sad that people are so thoughtless. And yet here we are. Chabaouk has been available for humankind for over 2,600 years.
Yeah.
It named Paul by name.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, how many people have directly associated with Paul?
Billions.
Oh, yes. A couple of billion minimum. Probably 2.5.
You think 2.5 billion people have associated Chabaouk with Paul?
I have associated with
nobody
Paul. I misunderstood what you're saying.
So. The number of people
I mean,
have associated
with Paul
is probably,
associated Chabaouk with Paul?
Yeah, how many people have simply come to realize that Chabaouk...
Probably can count that on two hands?
Yeah. Yes, I would agree.
Let me ask you two guys something. I know I talk a lot, so you can tell me shut up.
No. I like
Chabaouk 1:5.
Yes.
It says, witness among the Gentiles those who are actually observant and thoughtful, are astonished and astounded, amazed and surprised that indeed a work will be and now has been done in your days that you will not find credible even when it is written down and he is held accountable. Is that questioning Paul? I think it is.
I'm speechless. I mean, again, when you read that,
yeah,
it gave me
That's
us.
And it's followed by an indictment on the USA and Rome, the Roman Church. It says.
It is.
You know, so,
yeah, that's us.
Yeah.
It's God saying, I'm gonna see that this is done, and yet it's just like Prophet of Doom. I'm gonna do it for you. I'm gonna have somebody do it for you. Okay. He may not be the most likable guy in the world. He may not be
the
brightest guy in the world. And he's a Gentile, by the way. He's not even one of my own. I'm going to have him do it, and he's going to catch a lot of flack for it. But you know something? What he's going to do is going to be irrefutable because he's going to expose and condemn them using their words, not his own. And yet, you are just so stupid, you're not going to view it as being credible. Well, yeah, speaking about what we're doing, what we have done. Yeah, there's no question about it. And every time we come upon this kind of declaration, I'm dumbfounded. I don't celebrate it. And you would think that there'd be a sense of pride saying, wow, Creator God of the universe just made a reference to us. Wow, isn't that cool? No, it's not. It saddens me that God could be this clear, to be this desirous of revealing himself and to making the truth known and to exposing and condemning the lies that have kept mankind from knowing him, and that so few people have cared to share what he had to say. To me, it is sad from that point of view, and then it's also reassuring from the point of view of, okay, this is not the most popular stance you could possibly take, as I have been reminded here recently. But I tell you what, I don't have any regrets. In fact, just the opposite. There's nothing that I've done in my life that I'm more excited about, that I'm more pleased about, my whole life had but one thing, and this was the thing, it would have been a life well lived. Mm-hmm. I think we all feel that way. Yeah, we all feel that way. And, you know, Kirk, I do want to say something. We're being recorded now, but and there's a lot of people on still listening to us on the phone, and, mm-hmm. and the archives will carry all of this, and about 99% of the listeners are archive-based. You and JB have both endeavored to become translators. You both have endeavored to do your research on your own. And it reminds me a lot of our beloved Jackie, who is also doing this. And a person who gets a lot of flack, who I've come to really appreciate and dearly love, Lisa. She does a lot of it, a tremendous amount of research. But it's now pervasive in our family. And almost every family member now is coming up with insights on their own and adding to the wealth of our collective family. And, you know, every moment
makes it so much fun.
Yeah. So rewarding, so beneficial, so Asher.
Mm-hmm.
It's just every aspect of it is rewarding and uplifting and enriching. And you know, I occasionally have a reason to try to explain to somebody that will have Googled me, and they say, you know, boy, I don't know if I can handle this. You know, there's so much negativity. And I said, no, it's just the opposite. Yeah, I mean, I'm like God in the sense that, when God exposes and condemns human institutions, religion, and politics, he does so for a reason, because unless you know that these things are not trustworthy, you're never going to open your mind to God. But what he, and therefore I, and us, are destroying in terms of the credibility of religion, we're not leaving somebody distraught, having pulled their false hope from them. We're enriching them with the most uplifting and positive and nurturing and joyous and credible, empowering, liberating story in the universe, opportunity in the universe. We're replacing something that is absolute rubbish with a multifaceted diamond.
Yeah. Look at the doorway.
The truth is so much better than the lie.
Yeah, Stalin made the point of, you know, you can't replace something with nothing. And so his goal was to replace religion with communism. And he was right about
that.
You know, you're never going to convince someone who's religious to leave religion for nothing, which is why atheists don't have a lot of, you know, prospects in terms of, you know, convincing people. It's really hard to convince someone to leave something for nothing. But we're not doing that. We're offering you the truth. We'll dismiss all of your lies. We're going to condemn all of the lies you've been told, but we're going to show you the truth at the same time.
Correct. Yeah, and
if you're willing to accept it, you're on the greatest journey of the world.
Right. Yeah, Adam Weishaupt, when he created socialist secular humanism, knew that when he exposed and condemned the religion of Christianity, he had to replace it with a religion of his own, and he did. And a political practice is the moral code of that religion. And yes, you know, I was fortunate to have been among the few who got to travel through the entire width and breadth of the Soviet Union back in the time of the Soviet Union and through Eastern Europe when the Soviet Union dominated it. And what I saw was the religion of man, where men were elevated to the status of gods and their words became scripture. I did the same thing. I was one of the very first, in fact, may have been in the first group of Westerners allowed into communist China. And again, I saw human caricatures presented as if gods. And so, the even socialist secular humanism and communism, which claim to be based on reason as opposed to faith, have created a religion, and it's a religion of man.
Rather than worshiping a god of man's creation, they worship man as God.
Yes. Correct.
Well, Washington, D.C. is almost that way to most people.
No, there's rights to Jefferson and to Lincoln and to Washington.
Washington.
Yeah, and then the shrines to war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
the great obelisk. God, give me a break.
Yeah.
The Downs, the Brummels, all the way from Italy.
The Lincoln Memorial is a shrine. The Jefferson Memorial is actually a shrine. Yeah,
that's what the inscriptions on them say.
Is a sun god obelisk.
Well, you know, to James's point, you know, if you look through, what is it? I found it. Shavuot. You know, he tells you, he says, Yahweh says, you know, they will never be satisfied. Talking about those who follow follow the earth's way. The people, you know, the religious ways. So at least with the one thing you cannot say about Yahweh is that he's not satisfying. He covers every base, answers every question, gives you everything to live for. Gosh.
That's the perfect answer.
Yeah.
Proven from every possible way. Lovely.
Yeah. And if you're even a little bit rational, you can figure out, my gosh, this is really true. This is, you know, this, I'm not a mathematician, but I can figure out, I can do that equation and go, wow, it really happened that way. That makes total sense. 6 days, however many billion years. I mean, it's just any answer you're looking for, he'll satisfy you.
Yeah, jeez. Once you know where to look, the answers are there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yahweh reveals. That's right. The answer. Yahweh reveals.
Where we started, exactly.
Exactly. All right, my friends. It has been a wonderful experience. It's just amazing how you can just take two statements and can spend 2 hours on them.
An hour and a half, 2 hours?
Oh, yeah, and still not plumb their depths.
I don't have to move my marker very far, though.
A statement is to the quality of the author.
Oh, of course.
Indeed.
That's right.
Indeed.
Right.
Classes can spend months on Shakespeare, but we can spend weeks on one verse.
We can. Yep. Absolutely marvelous. All right. Well, good night, guys. I had a wonderful time. And Kirk, no, you do not talk too much. I'm probably the one that talks too much.
No.
We have a lot of good stuff to say.
I know you had a lot of good stuff.
Please
shut him up for a while. So forgive me, James. Cut in too much.
Huh?
Yeah, no, the more the better.
Never mind. You always add something good and something unique and interesting.
That's true. It's the nature of being part of a family. Well, good night, guys.
Good night. Good evening.
Take care. Happy Shabbat. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Happy Shabbat.
So long.